Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, another edition of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant. Hi there, Paul.
Hello, Mark.
Hey, we're finding peace of mind in estate planning last few shows.
Yeah.
I think we're going to maybe wrap it up this week and give us a little review of where we are to this point.
Yeah, we've been using Philippians chapter 4, verses 6 through 7, which Paul starts out by saying, be anxious for nothing. So here is where the Apostle Paul has us, which is there's something that's bothering you. There's something that you know is not settled and not right. There's something going on. And that could be a spiritual issue. It could be a physical issue, a mental issue. It could also be a very practical issue. And so I don't think it's a leap at all to say that there are things that we need to do in our practical lives that if we haven't done it, there is an anxiousness behind us. There is something that is pinging us that says, this is the right step. And until you get that right step done, then it's really difficult to find that peace. And when we actually take the step and get this accomplished, when we use our voice and accomplish the task at hand, then the result, according to Philippians, is that we will have peace, which will guard our hearts and our minds. And that word guard means to be a fortress. It means to stand guard around. And so that's really what estate planning does, which is it is a guard around us. It stands guard so that if we ever have a health incident, it is ready to stand up and guard us and protect us. How? By giving good instructions, by making sure that the right people are in place, by having documents that are always up to date and that they're never older than 3 to 5 years old. So when estate planning is done properly, when it's done well, it will stand as a guard to protect us, and it'll be a guard and be ready to protect the next generation. So when I die, then my estate plan stands guard to the next generation. And really, that's what we're going to talk a little bit about today is, well, in good estate planning, what does it mean to pass wealth off to the next generation, and what does it look like to stand guard for the next generation?
Well, it definitely gives you peace of mind to know that you're not paying more taxes than you need to. And that's definitely something you can plan for in proper estate planning.
It is. And it's actually one of the primary reasons that people come, which is, okay, I've spent my entire life now building something and I'm retired or I'm about ready to retire, because that's typically the biggest event that that catapults people to come and deal with this thing. So we've built this, these finances. We have a home. We have an IRA. We have some investment money. And maybe we've done very well. Then we really need to take a look at what does this thing called taxes do to us? Because we've spent our lifetime earning money. And what do you pay when you earn money? That's right. You pay taxes. And so oftentimes we feel that we've paid our fair share. We've already contributed to society. We've done this thing called work hard and we've paid our taxes. Now we come to find that if we die and if we have over a certain amount of money, that the government is going to step in and go, well, we want a little bit more. You haven't paid quite enough. Mm. Well, there's some good news, which is we can actually do really good planning to ensure that those taxes are not paid. And even if you have a lot of wealth, we can highly mitigate those estate taxes. So I want to take a look at how that happens here today. Is how do we mitigate and or fully eliminate taxes in good estate planning? And Mark, you've been with me for quite some time, and you know that I tend to lean into a trust model or utilizing a trust document more than utilizing a will document. So every individual needs one of those two documents. You need a will or you need a trust. Now, I tend to favor trusts over-utilizing will. So let me explain a little bit of that and why it works specifically in taxation issues. Is that a will in simplicity is a document that says, this is who gets my money. So a will does four things. Number one, we talked about this last show, which is it names guardians. So it tells us who is going to take care of minor children if we have minor children. Number two, it tells us who gets what we have. So in other words, it directs the money. And that's a good thing. We want to make sure that the right people get what is left over in our estate if we're done using it. Number three, it tells us who our personal representative is. That's the term that we use in Washington. Other people know that as an executor. So who is going to close the estate? Who's going to pay the final bills? Who's going to marshal all the assets or gather all the assets so that once we have them, we know to look at the tax ramifications, and then we distribute to the beneficiaries. So who is the personal representative is number three. Then number four is it. There are court instructions, or in other words, we need to make sure that the attorney does their job well and that it is legally sufficient and will be upheld by courts. So those are the four things that a will does. It tells us who the guardians are going to be. It tells us who gets our stuff. It tells us who's going to close it, and it gives court instructions. Now, in the simplicity of a will, what that is really doing is that it is simply directing money. It's very similar to a transfer on death or a beneficiary designation. So if you have an IRA, if you have an investment account, or even a bank account, there's a couple ways that you can own assets. Number one is that I'm married, so my wife and I could own a checking account or an investment account or our house. We can own it jointly, which means that both of us are on title of that same account. So if one of us dies, then because my spouse is also on the title, or because I'm also on the title, then it's the last person standing wins. So in other words, my spouse gets everything that is jointly owned. Why? Because she already owns it. We own it together. And so therefore, everything already goes to my spouse when it's jointly owned. Or in the case of an IRA, or if I had an asset that is individually owned by me. Let's say I have a checking account because I received an inheritance. My wife and I decided I'm going to hold that inheritance as my separate property. I'm not going to bring it into the marriage. That's one of the more common reasons why someone may have separate property. Or we got married later in life and I had already built something in life. And so we decided that what I brought into the marriage was going to stay separate. Okay, there's multiple reasons of why people have a separate account. Or maybe I'm just a ding dong and I open up a checking account in my own name and I forgot that I was married for 31 years. So I have a separate account that my wife is not jointly owned. Well, hopefully what I've done is I've put a transfer on death or a beneficiary designation. They're really doing the same thing. It means that when I open up an account, whether it's a checking account, whether it's an IRA, because IRAs cannot be jointly owned, right? That's a retirement fund, a 401k, a 403b, a Roth IRA. All of these different accounts, all these tax-deferred accounts, by tax law, they must be owned by an individual. You can't jointly own each other's retirement assets. Therefore, I need to name someone that when I die, that it goes to. So my instinct is that I'm going to naturally name my spouse. I'm going to make everything be directed towards my spouse. Now, the owning things jointly or by transfer on death / beneficiary designation, these are also probate runarounds. Because if my spouse already owns the account with me, then she doesn't have to go to a probate court to say, I already own it. Well, she already owns it. So therefore, when we own things jointly, it automatically goes to my spouse. If I have a transfer on death or a beneficiary designated asset, such as an IRA, such as a retirement account, then when I open up that account, I have to open it up with a financial institution, right? So I don't care if it's Schwab, Vanguard, TD, Ameritrade, if they even still exist, Edward Jones. I mean, there's so many different institutions, financial institutions. So fine, I open up an account. Well, when I open up that account, I sign a contract with that company. And that contract says, if I die, then the institution that holds my asset, that holds my account, they're already under a legal obligation by contract to look at the beneficiary transfer and transfer the money to that individual. So because there's a contract that they must follow, we also don't have to go to probate with that. So a couple of these things are already probate runarounds, jointly owned assets, and also beneficiary designations will save us from a probate. But here's the thing that they do. They just simply transfer money to the person. And they've given absolutely no tax considerations to the situation at all. They have not considered taxes. All they do is they transfer money. And that's what a will does in its simplicity. The only thing a will does, technically, is transfer money just like a beneficiary transfer. So it does not stop everything and go, what are the tax ramifications? Well, let's briefly talk about them. In Washington, someone, an individual can own up to the current exemption amount. If you own more than that, then a tax will start on everything above that figure. So not on the whole figure. You get to be exempted. I like exempt money from taxes. Does anyone else like money that's exempt from taxes? I do. But anything up and over that, you have to pay taxes on it. So what does that mean to when we look at what you have to pay taxes on? Well, that includes everything that you own. It includes your checking accounts. It includes your investment accounts, your retirement accounts, the value of your home. It includes life insurance. Okay, that might surprise some people because I thought thought that the life insurance passed tax-free. Well, it does. It passes tax-free to the beneficiary, so they will get the whole sum. If I have a $250,000 term policy and I die, whoever I name, my spouse, she will get a $250,000 check from the life insurance and she does not have to pay taxes on that. But what people fail to understand is that when you're totaling up how much Paul Grant owns, because in my story I just killed myself, that $250,000 is exempt from estate tax exposure. That's a place where using a will, joint ownership, or transfer on death, a beneficiary designation, those instruments cannot create tax savings clauses. Therefore, there's a shortfall when we have tax issues of using a will, which is why we lean towards more of a trust model when we're dealing with tax issues. So we're up against a break. And I know this is so exciting to talk about taxes. So I know people are riveted to come back and talk more about taxes.
Well, it does give you peace of mind to know that you are not paying more taxes than you need to in your estate plan. So we're going to find out more on how to do that as we continue in just a moment. People are intrigued by your approach to this subject. Paul, how do they find out more about your services?
Well, you can find out more at legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts, educational opportunities coming up, ways to communicate with us, all found at legacyandfaith.com.
Okay, back with more of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant in just a moment.
Can I avoid probate? Will I lose everything if my health becomes compromised? How do I preserve what I have for me and my family? Will the government take it all? This is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. These are some of the most common questions we get on a daily basis, and there are solutions for all of these issues. It is time for you to protect your family and what God has placed under your stewardship, and we can help. Go to legacyandfaith.com to find out more about our services and upcoming educational opportunities. That's Legacy and Faith.
Your photos, slides, scrapbooks, and home movies are invaluable and irreplaceable. Barry Kenny here with the Bear Services. Call us to save them as digital files to be stored electronically and shared liberally. We will even come to you so they stay in your possession. Go to thebearservices.com for more information. That's thebearservices.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. And continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, talking about peace of mind in estate planning this week and how to pay as little tax as possible, particularly possible when you use the trust model for your estate planning. So, Paul, you want to say some more about that?
Yeah, so where we've been here today is we've talked about wills versus trusts and what happens in preparing for taxes. And I don't know about you, listening audience, but I don't want to pay unnecessary taxes. I have a master's in taxation, so I don't mind actually paying a rightful tax. I actually am not offended by that. It actually means I made money this year. But I don't want to pay unnecessary taxes. And most estate taxes are unnecessary. There's always ways that we can strategize to not pay taxes. Now, one of the more simplistic ways is using the right instrument. So a trust, specifically when you are married. So when you're single, it gets more complicated. There's less power using a will versus a trust when you're a single individual. But if you're married, then the revocable living trust really sets up a different dynamic for tax purposes. So what that looks like is when one spouse passes away, the trust will typically divide into two different sections, one for the decedent and one section for the surviving spouse. Now, this is really important because what we're doing is we're taking a portion of the estate and putting it into the decedent's section, and thereby that money qualifies for their exemption amount, leaving another section for the surviving spouse. And when they pass away, then we get the second exemption amount. So when you use a will, unfortunately, if I just give everything to a spouse, they end up with the whole thing and I didn't use the proper exemption amounts. And therefore, if I give everything to my spouse and I'm over that threshold, a tax, an unnecessary tax, could start. So this is the power in taxing of using a revocable living trust, specifically when you are married. And almost every revocable living trust, believe it or not, I've actually seen some that don't do this base planning. Most people use trusts in the philosophy of either A, avoiding probate, which it should be able to do, or B, they want to make sure that there's proper tax planning. I've actually seen a couple trusts that don't do the proper tax planning. And yet that's one of the most basic things in a trust. So most trusts are designed for married couples, ensuring that the taxes are going to work properly. Now, on a federal level, that is all the way up at $15 million and it is continually climbing. And so if you're out there and you have more than that, on a federal level, a 40% tax would start. Now, boy, that bites. So we really got to make sure that that if you have been blessed financially in life, that we got to deal with this thing called estate planning. You got to have the right instrument. And I just kind of gave you a peek behind the curtain, which is there's a lot of documents out there that actually don't do the tax language right. So even getting a good review on something that you think you've done well would be imperative and very important, actually. So the federal level is really high and Washington State much lower. And using a revocable living trust will ensure that we're using the proper exempt powers. So then what would be the benefit if you're single or if you have more than that type of money? Because then you would be exposed to a tax. Well, there's always things that we can do. Are you charitably minded? Boy, I love people who have a passion after charities that want to give and be generous in life. And so, giving and being generous is always a great way to mitigate and further reduce estate tax exposure. But we want to make sure that's done right. What if you go to the small country church or a smaller church? Let's say, most churches in America I think the stats are that there's right around 85 people. So most churches in America are not the mega churches. Mm-hmm. They're not the super big churches. They're actually small, and they're ran like small churches. So mm-hmm. you have a board member. You have board people. They're your next door neighbors. They're people that you go to church with, and they're doing the best that they can. But if that small church was to actually receive a larger check, are you sure that they would manage it well long term? And maybe you have a desire that there be a charitable trust, or that your gift extend over time. So instead of just writing a check one time, here's a check and good luck, and I'm glad the charity benefited from it. That's great. But would you like to give a legacy gift? Would you like that charity to have money coming from your estate in your name long term? So over a 10-year period that they can benefit from it. And maybe specifically with smaller organizations, they would have the predictability that's coming. They wouldn't spend it in one lump sum. You know, everything that we talk about with beneficiaries on this show, of beneficiaries making financial mistakes, well, nonprofits can make financial mistakes too, specifically when they're just starting. And so maybe it is wise to extend that gift over time. So instead of giving them $100,000 with just one fell swoop, or giving them $500,000 with one check, maybe it would be better to give them that money over a period of years so that they can anticipate it, but they can budget it and use it wisely in the course of what their vision is as a nonprofit. So being charitably minded is a great way to reduce estate taxes. And actually, in estate tax world, you get a dollar-for-dollar deduction, which is different than how giving on an annual basis influences you. You actually do not get a dollar-for-dollar reduction from your income when you give to nonprofits throughout the year. Mm. What it's saving you is your tax bracket. So if you're in the 25% tax bracket, you get 25% usage out of your annual gift giving when you give to nonprofits. However, when you give in an estate plan, you get a dollar-for-dollar reduction. Mm. So if I give $1 million away and I have a $5 million estate, that means I have reduced my estate down to $4 million. Now only $4 million is exposed to taxes. Well, remember, I get my exemption power, so that reduces it. So it really limits the scope of how much is exposed to estate tax when you are generous. Generosity is fabulous. I love working with people who are generous. I don't care if a person's values align with mine or don't align with mine. Society greatly appreciates you being generous. Society has determined that nonprofits help places that the government cannot. So there's government programs to help the poor, to help the homeless. But when a group like the Union Gospel Mission that has been around for ages steps in and has programs to help the homeless, society goes, we like you. We want you to be in existence. We want you to fill the gap, because then the taxpayers don't have to do it. And so we love generosity, and there's entire code sections about how to be generous and help society in a way that you want to help. That can actually mitigate estate taxes. So using the proper instrument. And lastly, as we close down, when using a trust, even when you're single, it will help long-term your beneficiaries mitigate taxes, both income and estate taxes. So when built properly, beneficiaries actually are the winners in proper estate planning. Their tax exposure is highly reduced when the proper instrument is used. A will just writes a check. A trust can actually tax plan for charities and for your beneficiaries long-term, as well as tax plan for you. So using the right instrument is actually paramount when we talk about taxes.
Peace of mind in estate planning. Hopefully you've gotten a little peace as you've thought about some of these issues. You want to find out more about Paul's approach to estate planning. How do people get in touch with you, Paul?
Head over to legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts, educational opportunities that are upcoming, and ways to communicate with us, all found at legacyandfaith.com.
It's the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.